I think that the first question we need to ask, what is the first covenant, which is mentioned by the author of Hebrews? What is this first covenant? When we say first covenant, author is using not only term first covenant, but then is using it in verse 7, according to the Greek language, also second covenant, first and second covenant. What is the first covenant? What is second? Second is clear. Second covenant is the new covenant for him. Covenant which we as Christians, we accept it when we believe in Jesus. But what is the first covenant? Normally we would expect that the first covenant would be either Adamic covenant or Noahic covenant or maybe Abrahamic covenant. But I would like that the text itself, the author of Hebrews, will give us a definition what he thinks about the first covenant. And in chapter 9, in verse 1, he gives the answer. What is this first covenant? Now, the first covenant had regulations for worship and also an earthly sanctuary. Therefore, for him, the first covenant is not Noahic covenant or Adamic or Abrahamic covenant, but it's clearly Mosaic covenant with regulations and also with the tabernacle, with the priesthood and everything what is there. And this is something very interesting because he speaks about Mosaic covenant or Sinaic or Sinai covenant as the first one, and then the new one is the second. We would think that the author will speak about one covenant, maybe with two different phases. But he's not speaking about one covenant, even though we will see later on that he's using also different vocabulary, but he speaks explicitly about first and second. Therefore, this first covenant is very clear. It's regarding to the Mosaic covenant, Sinai covenant with regulations to worship and with earthly sanctuary. In Hebrews chapter 7, verse 22, we can read that Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant. For what the author is really doing is that he is comparing the old regulations, Old Testament regulations regarding how to obtain forgiveness through sacrifices, how you can be reconciled with God through the service of priests. He is comparing all these sanctuary services with Jesus Christ, with his first coming. And what does it mean that he is here? And the author of the book of Hebrews reflects on that Mosaic covenant in a perspective of Jesus' work, of Jesus' first coming. And of course, when he compares the first covenant with Jesus Christ, then he concludes, well, Jesus Christ is superior. He is better. And in the whole book of Hebrews, you have this statement about that Jesus is better. You have many things better in Jesus, and he is superior. He is superior than angels. He is superior than the high priest. And in him, we have everything better. He's better priest or better high priest. Better sacrifice, he is offering better promises, we have even better hope, we have better blood, better tabernacle, we have better country, better possession, and even he speaks in chapter 11:35 about better resurrection. How you can speak about that resurrection can be better? Well, because the first resurrection, when you think about resurrection, is still that somebody was resurrected and died. But in Jesus, that true resurrection is for eternal life. Therefore, he's always comparing everything with what we have better in Jesus. And when he thinks about the first covenant, therefore covenant related also to regulations, to worship and to tabernacle, he speaks, well, of course, in Jesus we have something better. He's superior than that. In chapter 8, verse 6, You can read that better covenant, as we read before, is really built on better promises. What are these better promises? Now, better promises are described in chapter 7, like verse 23 to 25, when you see that in the Old Testament system of salvation, you had to receive forgiveness on the basis of blood of the animals. But now you have something better. You have a direct access to God, and He can save you. He is able to save you completely, still, because He is always here and ready to intercede for you. Therefore, it's very important to see that these better promises are really promises of forgiveness without sacrifices of animals and without blood, because of the direct contact and access to God through Jesus Christ, through His blood. Therefore, now the question is, according to that passage we started to study in verse 7, what was really going wrong? Where was the fault found? Where was the fault? We have three possibilities. When in Old Testament, even in the New Testament, you speak about covenant, it's not only what is written, these written stipulations. Part of the covenant is God who is making the covenant, and part of that covenant are also people with whom this covenant was made. Therefore, you have God, you have stipulations, and you have people. Therefore, what was going wrong with the first covenant? We heard this morning that God is always faithful. Therefore, nothing wrong with God. That's very clear. God is faithful to all His promises, to all what He's doing. Therefore, there are two possibilities. Stipulations were wrong, or people were wrong. When you look to verse 8, author is providing an answer. In verse 8, you read, but God found fault with whom?
Them.
With them, or as NIV is interpreting it correctly already, with the people, and said. But let me tell you that here we have also in original version some difficulties. We have textual variants. And you can read, and I will not go now to details because my time is very short, that you can take this, autois, not only as dative, but it can be or autous, first accusative. It can be also, as in some versions, as autois. Therefore, it can be read, but God found fault with people. This will be that first possibility, with autous as accusative, related to the participle before. But it can be also, in some variants, textual variants, related to the verb that he said something, and this variant is with dative, autois. Therefore, the statement would be, and God found fault. It's not stated now with whom and with what, and said to the people. For it's not yet explicitly stated where is the fault. The God found fault, and he said to the people. Well, I think that still the text is providing very good answer. And this answer is provided in the quotation. It is what the author of Hebrews is using, and it's quotation from Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 to 33. Let me tell you, this is the longest quotation in the New Testament from the Old Testament. It's the longest one. And what is also very interesting, that from this longest quotation from the Old Testament, Paul is discussing only one word. And this one word is new. He is playing only with that one word. But we can see in that statement where was really the fault. If you see ambiguity in verse 8, even though this translation NIV can be taken from the context like a valid one, that God found fault with the people, the text in Jeremiah is telling us where was the fault. Let me now read the quotation as we have it in Hebrews. The time is coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with forefathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they did not remain faithful to my covenant. In Jeremiah 31:32, you have even stronger vocabulary that they broke my covenant. Okay, they broke my covenant. They were not faithful. And I think that, therefore, the first answer must be very clear, provided from the text itself, that the fault was really with the people. And nothing wrong with the stipulations itself. Nothing wrong with God. He is always faithful. But the problem was with people. They receive it in a different spirit. They should. Here we need to say a few words. New covenant will be therefore not like the covenant at Sinai, and the reason was those let out of Egypt did not remain faithful or broke my covenant. Therefore, the inequity of the first covenant, if the word inequity is correct, I am not really sure, but let's use it for now. Inequity of the first covenant was not in God, but was in improper reception of that covenant. And then secondly, it is also with association with the object lessons or association with the ceremonies which were related to that first covenant, as the author is calling it. And these ceremonies were getting old. This is what we have in the text. Why getting old? Aging. Because Jesus Christ arrived as a fulfillment of all what was there in the Old Testament regulation. Therefore, I would say that this inadequacy or this fault was in not really fault. In Greek language here, the word which is used is amemptos. And this word amemptos should be properly translated as blameless. Usually it's translated as blameless, or here like nothing wrong, but therefore nothing was wrong with God. It was blameless as for the God, but then was something aging because it was an object lesson, and also the fault, if there was fault, something was with blame. It was on the side of people who receive it. I will not go into details with this word blameless, but these two answers are here, that it is this improper reception and then the association with the tabernacle, with the priesthood, in comparison to the ceremonies of the Old Testament. Of course, Jesus is the mediator of the better covenant, and therefore everything is now perfect in him. Let me also tell you that in the Old Testament we have some hints that this fault was not really with God, but was with people. Not only that New Testament now, this new covenant, stresses this new relationship, which that new covenant is built on, that direct and new relationship with Jesus. This relationship was already announced, and it was in purpose in the Old Testament. If you read, for example, texts like Exodus 19, verse 4, you can see it very plainly and clearly when the statement is, you yourself, God is speaking to his people, saw what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings, and I brought you to and we would anticipate that now will be, and I brought you to Mount Sinai, or to the Promised Land, or to the wilderness. No, it stated, and I brought you to myself. Therefore, this was always in God's intention to build personal, close relationship. This is what we have in the New Covenant, and we have it also already announced in the Old Testament. Another hint about this, right and proper relationship with God we have already in the Old Testament is in the grammar of Decalogue. Let me give you a very quick overview of what you know probably from Hebrew about the negative command. You have two possibilities how to express in Hebrew negative command, like you shall not, okay? You shall not kill or commit adultery, you will not steal. The first possibility is it with al and jasif. And the meaning is that is prohibition for immediate situation. And then you have law with imperfect, and this law with imperfect has two possibilities with translation. Will be for the permanent prohibition, like never to do it, or it can be for the future situation. For if it is like with the word fear, let me give this example, and it will be with al and jasif, then the statement will be, do not fear now. When will be law, and meaning would be permanent prohibition, therefore never fear. Or you shall not fear, will be translation. And if it is for the future situation, it will be, you will not fear. In Decalogue, you can guess that we have law, not al, but law and imperfect. For you have two possibilities how to translate, and I would say that there are not two possibilities, there is one, that the command, which is permanent prohibition, should be taken as future. It means it should be taken as God's promise for us. Therefore, something permanent experience, should be given by God himself, because he is promising and is faithful to his promises, as we heard this morning. And God's people, when they heard God's commands, they should take it not as they can do it and we will do it, but something they could realize that they have no power to do it, as in Joshua 24:19, Joshua is saying when he's renewing covenant with his people, you are not able to serve the Lord. Joshua is saying in Joshua 24:19, they should say it not we can do it, but they should allow God to do it in them. Therefore, the people of God should really stay in close relationship with him and allow him, that he will fulfill his promise for them, that he will not, that he will accomplish this experience in them. It will be permanent experience in their life. I see that my time is really gone, even though we started late. Let me say two more things. This new covenant is not really new covenant. We should better translate as a renewed or renewal of covenant. It is built on two observations for this linguistic reason. In Hebrew, chadash berit chadasha, like chadash, new, it's not only new, but also like renew. For example, you have the new moon, okay, Rosh Chodesh. This new moon does not mean that moon will be now brand new one, but it's a renewal, it's a qualitatively new phase, and this new quality gives the meaning to it. Or in Psalm 51:10, David is praying about the renewal of his spirit. It's not about new spirit, but new renewal of the right spirit, this right attitude. And in Greek, we have two words. We have kainos and neos. And neos is for brand new, something brand new, like new wine. But kainos is for new in the sense of renew, of renewal, and this is the word which is used here. It is used also for the new creature. When we receive Christ, we are new creatures in Jesus. It doesn't mean that we are, you know, annihilated and now we are new, brand new. No, we are renewing our devotion to Him. This is about new covenant. It is about new command. Jesus is saying that we should love each other, not that before they had to hate and now to love. And many other occasions like new heavens, new earth. Again, it's not the annihilation of earth is viewed here, but renewal of earth and heavens. This is therefore kainos. And in Hebrews 13:20, it is stated that this new covenant is called everlasting covenant. This is still vocabulary of the author himself. Therefore, new covenant is everlasting. In that sense that now must be renewed in Jesus Christ what was the original intent of the law from very beginning as we have it in prophets. Because this in view is not that God is making a new covenant with Christians, with Christian church. No, this renewal was already announced by prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel. And they, as the servants of the covenant, are calling people to renewal relationship with their God. And let me close with a few statements from prophetical word that this was always like that. In Ezekiel chapter 36, you can read this beautiful statement. I will, verse 26 and 27, Ezekiel 36, 26, 27, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. You see? This is this renewal that God will do it already with people who are coming from the Babylonian exile. When they will be back, there will be this revival. And God will move them to obey. The same is in Jeremiah. In Jeremiah 32, verses 39 and 40 is saying exactly the same. 32, verse 39 of 38 and to 40. This is beautiful. I like that verse very much. They will be my people and I will be their God. It's a covenant formula. I will give them singleness of heart and action. Not a split heart, okay, but singleness. So that they will always fear me for their own good and the good of their children after them. I will make an everlasting covenant with them. I will never stop doing good to them and I will inspire them to fear me. For God is inspiring them. God is moving them to obedience. In other words, this new covenant we have in Hebrews, this is not the really new, like brand new. It's the everlasting one. It's calling back to the original intent of the covenant, which was already announced in the past. The fault was not with God. It was only with people. And as new covenant people, we need to build this personal, beautiful, intimate relationship with God, as was intended in the very beginning. And what was aging, what was really old, it was only these regulations we were added to that before the first coming of Christ. When Jesus came, everything better we have in Him. Therefore, new covenant is a new phase of God's covenant in time, without external regulations, because Jesus Christ is the mediator of the new covenant, and in Him we have everything better, because He is the high priest in the better sanctuary with the better covenant. Therefore, the stress is on relationship and internalizing of the covenant of God. Law, not somewhere out in the new covenant, but law, not as external burden, but law as it was from the original intent, always like that. Law in heart and law in the mind. Therefore, obedience built on the experience of genuine forgiveness in Jesus, in God.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.